Welcome to the Vietnamese podcast. Today I have Min here. I can no longer actually address you by anything that we use before in other episodes because we are actually moving this relationship. Are we?
Yeah, because we're actually friends now.
We've always been friends, but
I don't know.
But it's okay. The quickest analogy is the whole prince. Who is now called, and he had a symbol, right? Mm-hmm. From this day on, we shall not call her Min anymore. We shall call her the artist.
The symbol. I prefer to be Min than the artist. I prefer to be called Min before anything else.
Yeah, because Prince is like, don't call me Prince anymore. But he was just doing that because label issues and everything.
I'll say for me, the equivalent of that is, I've been recently thinking about this because people really, it's the elephant in the room. And people be like, people still have this thing, like, what does chef mean to you? Can we call you Chef Min? I'm like, you can definitely call me Chef Min, but you know that means like calling me Auntie Min. The word chef to me is like auntie or sister or mom. Because like for me, the word chef is where you're in a place. Number one, the word chef is very military, right? It's very brigade system. It's very patriarchal, right?
I am.
And it's part of a system. And I never, ever strive to be, even in my culinary career, I never strive to be a chef. I've always been a cook. I've always identified as a cook. But for 2 years, now I'm starting to identify it, I was chef. And it was during the COVID years, the two COVID years.
Wait, can we just let the audience kind of know, because this is important, like, this is somebody who's gotten a Michelin star. This is no small deal. And to have that departure from the chef word and world is we're doing that right now. You're.
I feel like it's not a departure for me.
Okay.
I've always used various different media to express what I have up here in my world building, like in my ecosystem. Use that to interpret my ideas and share with people. And that's always been, so it's the same thing, right? So I don't think that has ever changed, either be food or a sculpture.
These are just mediums.
Yeah, exactly. Right. That's why it's called a media or mediums.
Right? I'm going to ask you the next question based on my own little experience. Recently, I typed into ChatGPT all of the things that I'm passionate about. And I said, I'm worried that I'm a little bit too confused and spread out. And then it broke it down and said, no, don't be worried and confused. Your one obsession is this. And I'm not going to go to my obsession because this is not about me. But I want to know, there is a through line of your obsession in what you do. And that's what we're talking about. Doesn't matter what the medium is. You're obsessed with something.
I love humans. I love humanity. I love the marginal stories. That's really important to me. It's marginal stories, right? I love things unseen. I love making decisions of what remains unseen and what gets shared. And for me, I think the core of it is really, it's humanity and then building. At a very young age, and you and I can get into this later, at a very, very young age, I realized that most things are a construct, right? And most things are perspectives. And for me, it's a tool that I understand so well that I forget that it's a tool. And when I use it so quickly and I code switch and I filter it so quickly, I'm starting to learn that that's when I don't play well with people because people haven't caught up to the world I have built, that I've constructed. And then I'm like, oh, wait, that construction works. Whereas people, I think, I don't give all the information about worlds. So the construct seems awkward to them or not. They're not in on it. But we're all constructing, constantly constructing, right? So for me, a medium is just using something that people understand to connect with them to my construct and then to learn their construct. Because like for me, I'm really curious about people's construct because someone's construct can give you a lot of information about someone, where they've been, where they want to go, their history, their values, right? It's go beyond ethnographic and psychology. It's really about like this deep down motivation, right? And I have like so many insecurities that become strengths, right? Like my insecurity because I'm always a loner. You know, I came here, you know, like so many, I've been given so many things that make me a weirdo loner that I've had to practice how to play well with others. But I also, my baseline is I like to be alone. That's where I'm most comfortable, right? But I love connecting with people to share ideas. And I think this has been in my blood as a Vietnamese migrant for many generations, right? As we are constantly determining what we keep and when we assimilate. And that's never changed. It doesn't change in my parents. I carry it with me. It's like, you know, it's epigenetic. It's like we have these things. You know, I think you and I talked about in previous episodes, like what's that motivation and that stubbornness and what's like, you know, whatever happens on the outside, inside, you know, I think it's that. It's that epigenetic migrant way of when are you being colonized and when is it an exchange and when do you tip that yourself? And for me, I'm constantly balancing that, right? Like, I think we've talked about this before. Like, I think the word decolonization is a movement that is lacking, right? I would rather everyone think about an anti-colonial practice. To be decolonizing in the way it's been used in a lot of academic world in the Western world and asked of other countries, ask the victims to do the work. I'm like, why are you asking the victims to do the work? Why are you asking me to throw out my banh mi and my pho or whatever else? And it's just not the French, right? It's also the Americans. It's also the Chinese. It's also the Japanese. Some of it's assimilation between different clans, right? Vietnam has flattened our own clans. It's something that we've done for a long time. Nga King, there's not that many Nga King. There's a lot of people. People don't realize Nga King is not an ethnicity. It just means we're city people. We're like plains people, right? But people use that term as our ethnicity is Nga King. And I'm like, that's not really an ethnicity. That's just saying that you're not this other tribe, right? And so having some of these deeper understanding is a construct. And then for me, like, I think I really start figuring out, like, okay, it's a construct. But exploitation of people is something that's really real. And then if we are going to decolonize, we're asking people to do that for themselves when it's not a choice for everyone, right? But I said, but if we have a choice, the thing we should be doing is anti-colonial practices, is don't do the exploiting and the, you know, that has been done to others.
Oh, there's so many things to unpack here. There really is. Because there's a chef journey, the title. Oh. There's the decolonization.
Military, right? Chef is
military. Brigade. There's so many things to unpack here. And I'm trying to figure out which direction I'm about to take because we need to get here eventually.
It's so simple.
No. The whole gang, right? Mm-hmm. Gang to carry to, mm-hmm. Yeah. We will get here, but I think we need to build some context to our conversation. 6 or 7 years ago, as I'm listening to you, I'm thinking 6 or 7 years ago, I would not be able to sit here and have this conversation with you because I wouldn't have enough context to understand what the heck you just said. And I was just in North Carolina with family who wouldn't register a thing you said because they date white men. They live in white communities and they're Vietnamese. And
they may know more than you think.
Perhaps.
They may know a lot more than you think.
In other things, but not this context of what we're talking about.
And feel it.
Yeah.
And use the language. But they may understand more than us. We're privileged to have community, Vietnamese community nearby.
Yeah. But the reason I bring that up is because I think I seek to change the way I view brigade, chef, hierarchy, patriarchy, as I get warmer and warmer to the idea of basic equality, because I don't come from that world. I come from a very, like you said, very masculine US Marines, and I'm reverse engineering all of these things.
Please, you know, the thing is, I think as an activist, I really want to move fast. But as a human being, I don't align with that all the time. As a human being, my baseline is I would rather this reflection and having conversation and touching each other as human level is more important to me. So I don't think we should discount and ask for that change without a lot of reflection and compassion.
Yeah. And I think the work that you do, you are moving at the speed of light.
I don't think so.
And I mean that, and I don't mean that any...
Yeah.
I mean that in a very popular, pop culture sense.
Okay, fair. And that's other people's, that's an external validation, right?
Yeah, in the Vietnamese pop world, it's going to be hard to catch up to what we're talking about, you know?
I guess I don't think about others catching up because I'm never going to belong.
Right. Yeah, and that's why as we get into this, the discussion that we're having is how do you get through entirely? I mean, I don't think entirely is a word too. How did you get through the whole food world and leave it and be okay with like this next journey when it's so complicated for the rest of us to even understand like what you did?
I guess I've always been that person. So it's hard, but I think I've always been that person that has an inner drive and motivation that's different because I've always been different, right? So for me, external validation is only important when I want to make someone feel comfortable and I want to love and respect them, right? So for me, like my parents' external validation, their comfort level is important to me. So I will construct things to make them feel good.
Mm.
I will construct things to make you feel good. But then when we get to know each other, you're like, man, it's just a real weirdo. And I'm like, yeah, that's who I am. I'm very comfortable with that, right? But I don't want you to have to weigh that. Because my parents are really, it's really hard. They're complicated, complex people. But they have a lot of Confucianism in them, especially my dad, right? You know, so, you know, very like order of the family. And order of society is very important to them. So at a young age, I learned that all the things that were my reality was not their reality, right? But I knew that their reality meant so much to them that it doesn't, yeah, do I fight it when I was younger? Yeah, but now like I'm like, there's no point in fighting it. They're good people. They're doing good things. I'm a good person that they might not see, right? Because for them, like, you know, they're so Catholic, but they're so calm about it, right? Like, you know, bo la bo, ma la ma, ja la ja, you know, it's like they're very, there's an order to that, right? And for them, they're like, well, it's just the way our ancestors have done it. But they don't, the thing is, they don't realize their world's, when I look at it from like an observer and historian, I'm like, you've done you your truth is not everyone's truth, right? But for them, because they're in a community, they would think so. And then I can debate that all day. But what's the point, right? Is their construct makes them happy, gives them peace. So then now that I know that, I'm like, oh, so I have to find a construct that fits into my own peace and my own weirdness, right? But when I was young, my dad, he literally said, he's like, my parents are like, you can be weird, but you can only be weird in this square box right now. That's it. The minute you get out of that square box, you are going to act like a girl. You're going to be like the oldest daughter. You're going to like, you know, like in Vietnamese, it's like, Lam Gung, you know, be the mirror, right? Lam Gung Cho, you know, be the model, right? Lam Gung Cha Tak Em, Lam Gung Cha Sa Hoi. You know, there's so many obligations. And for me, like, I don't see, it took me a long time, but I don't see anything wrong with it now. But you have to come at it at your own, in your own way.
See, and I think that the way the universe is organized from beginning of time to now is the artists like you, so forward thinking, on the edge constantly of new ideas. And the people like your parents and my parents, coming from tradition, coming from old conservative ways, these two things are constantly going to be clashing, no matter what we do.
I think that your parents and my parents are not that far from us. I don't think my parents are that far from me. It's just that they have to hold their space because so much in their life has been shaken up. Because they think very differently and they know it. But they have to construct. They have to deal with it, and người giống người ta, and they have to.
Let's argue this. I'm going to fight back on this. I think you and I are very different from them. I think
they raised me to allow me to be this person, but it had to be boo-boo, you know, because the thing is, I think for them, like my dad, he knew from a young age, right? I was nine and grew up in Huntington Beach, right? Or we went to the beach and I was nine and, you know, Redondo Beach, a beach in, you know, the Southern California area. And we were fighting at nine. I was always, you know, Vietnamese to them. You know, Kung Dao, and then my dad would call, you know, Con Hoang, you know, like, you know, you're just a wild child, you know, like all these words that I know because people don't even know word for wild child.
Yeah.
I know all of them.
Because they were calling you that.
Yeah. So mama, you know, like I know all of them because I've been called all of them, right? But my dad drew a line in the sand and he goes, why are you fighting with me? Like, he's like, can you understand my point of view? Because I'd be like, Dad, you're not catching up. You're too slow, you know, like thinking, you know? And I said, Dad, this is like the reality. You're like so slow. And then he drew me a line in the sand. And then he drew a line in the middle. Okay, he drew a line and he drew a line in the middle. He goes, okay, you're right here. You're very close to the middle. And Mo, I'm not close to the middle. Mo Guang Yu Zai Doan. Jin Chang Ko Zhao, you know, Con Trai Đầu Lòng, you know, Mẹ Chết Sớm. Like, he's like, I had to go through all these things. Like, so it's not the middle. You look like we're meeting in the middle. That's an American word. It's meeting in the middle. He goes, but for you, you just want a dad who's American. He goes, you are right there. And he goes, for me, how do I get there? He goes, I had to go through all this. And he goes, so if I take a little longer than you, forgive me. Because my road is a lot different than yours. So he knew, right? So in that moment, I'm like, oh, my dad's not taking the same road. You know, and he goes, bố với con đâu phải đi song song với nhau. Con nghĩ như vậy. Con nghĩ là bố với con lúc nào cũng là đi song song. Nhưng mà đời của bố nó dài hơn. He wants a history, right? And this is a nine-year-old. And that's my Vietnamese is the way it is because, you know, I have these very deep conversations with my dad, right? And he explained really early on, he goes,
That's exactly what I'm saying. We're not the same as them. We're not
same, but they gave us my parents. I'm gonna speak for my parents. Yeah. Gave me the privilege and the freedom to be who I am today.
Yeah,
because they let me fight, and then they still loved me.
Yeah, because
they let me be who I am, like as much Kung Dao as I am, and they're very, very bad. Like, you know, like to the max, right? You know, đi lễ hàng tuần, you know, nothing weird, ăn cơm vẫn cần phải mời, you know.
All the traditions, yeah.
Like all the proverbs, right? Like I know them all,
yeah.
Right? Like so they keep these, they keep these traditions very, very tightly. Like lễ phép,
yeah,
is still a primary thing in my family.
Yeah.
I used to hate it, you know, especially you have friends and like, dude, it's like going to fucking like, you know, like the, you know, Uncle Tướng's house. And then my parents are like, they're like, it's just the social order. They're like, it doesn't mean we don't love you. We just, that's the basic. You have a social order, right? And for them, social order, because they don't have, because it's been so shaken up that they're hanging on to the social order, right? Because that's what they have, right?
Yeah. I question the way I do see things very similar to the way you see the world. I really do.
We
it's almost identical. There's this fight that we want to. It's not a fight. It's for me. It's a struggle.
We're very both. We have a lot of yang in us. We have a lot of nao in us.
Mm-hmm.
But for me, it's temporary because my basic. I don't know about your baseline, but my very baseline is ma.
Very chill.
My baseline super is chill. Very yin, like ma.
But right? You get hit, you're gonna yeah.
We're forced into situations where we had to fend for our beliefs. And so you have to be nowly, you know?
Yeah.
And then, but our baseline is we're always as in our older, in my older age, I'm very ma. And, you know, like I try to be very chill. And I find myself a little nowly. And I'm like, oh, that's because I'm insecure. I'm trying to hang on to something.
The similarities is the life work that we have is we both share a huge background in food and entertainment and film and now in art.
Mm-hmm. I'm so glad.
Thank you. But what is driving that? That's what I want to know. What is driving that inside of us? And it's more than that, really.
For me, I think, insecurities, right? Always.
Yeah.
Like for me, the insecurity... For me, I'm always the insecurity of always being someone who's marginalized is my motivation in life.
Now, I was talking to somebody over the weekend about this. They were saying, if you had a lot of money, if you had a lot of success on that monetary corporate level, mm-hmm. you wouldn't feel the way you do because you wouldn't feel marginalized. And I said, you're not right. It's not right. I told the person. So what is it?
Because we make a choice. Because for us, being is temporary.
Totally. But it did make me think about it. It did make me think about that. I'm like, wait, if I was comfortable.
How would I know?
And I was like, no.
I'm going into Vietnamese because I get that thrown at me. And then sometimes for half of a second, you believe it.
Yep.
And then you look at
there
it.
There we go. Like, yeah.
You're like, oh no, and you can't tell them that because mình vẫn phải lấy phép, đúng không? Nhưng mình đâu có dám nói là người ta không đúng, mình đâu có dám nói như vậy. Nhưng mà mình phải. But then let me say it in English because this is an English podcast, right? But I usually have the reason I'm code switching to Vietnamese is most of this kind of conversation happens in Vietnamese for me. It doesn't happen in English for me. It happens in Vietnamese because I always have to like take a moment with in Vietnamese or someone who's criticizing me in Vietnamese, right? It's like, nó có đâu mà you know like đâu có của đâu mà dám nói, and I'm like and you can't say and for you can't and I used to have such basic language and I'd be like cái đó không đúng, or I would be like you know không có phải như vậy, you know like it would be very basic, and now I have a developed language, right, where you have to be a lot more zigzag, you have to be like thì người nào cũng khác nhau, it's very simple, người nào cũng you know con đường khác nhau, and you have to accept them for who they are. And I realized that those things are very important in the way, you know, relationships with people, you know, and I think that that's, and you have to be really confident of who you are. And I'm very privileged that I can be confident, right? Like it's something that when people say that, they have a different, their food, they, their confidence is based on things that are different from us. My confidence is based on humanity and doing the work that continues that we've been doing from many, many hundreds of generations after generations, right? Materiality, it's always been there, but it's very temporary. You can have one generation that has it and one generation that does, even within the same family.
Yeah.
They're just material.
Yeah.
But I still believe that the goodness is generational. Right. It's that's still very Vietnamese about me, right? Like có phước để lại cho con, right? Like I even though I don't believe that 100% filial piety, but I do believe in karmic ways, right? And I think that's part of the work, right? And I do believe I am in my heart of heart believe that con người, the people are good. And we always have to return back to that. And then the minute we lose hope in that, humanity's done. Humans as a species, we will die off if we don't believe in each other, right? We can be highly technical, but if we don't have the basis of what makes us human for our own survival, then we're done. And our survival is not based in getting the most and winning. Our survival is our intelligence and our way of living in a community. When you compare anthropologically different species, you compare how they connect with each other. So for me, it's really important to think about how we connect with each other. Mm-hmm.
This departing from food and this idea of hierarchy in the kitchen and now moving on to art, it's a very individual thing. But it was gradual because I have a front row seat to this. It was gradual, right?
I think it's always the same for me. Mm-hmm. I think it's gradual for... If you look at external things,
yeah.
It's gradual. But if as you get to know me my entire life, I'm that same weirdo kid. Same weirdo kid who will tell you some crazy story. And then 5 years later, you're like, you really meant that. I'm like, why didn't I? And because people can't fathom it, right? And for me, I'm like, yeah, because I have to go on to my next thing, you know, like.
See, but that's what I was saying in the beginning of the episode is that artists move a lot faster than the conservative set of people. That's just the balance of nature of the world, of the.
I don't think it's just artists. I think people who, I don't know if it's artists. I don't know who, I don't think you can categorize one particular group, but for me, it's so important to, I need to get a, I, you know, it's, for me, it's so important to help expand understanding. It's very important. And any chance that I get to get people to expand and reconstruct their thinking is a chance that I take. Because the thing is, I'm, if you think I'm weird now and I'm fast, in my mind, I'm weirder and faster, right? So I'm always trying to align, make room for myself in the future, make room for weirdos for me in the future.
Yeah.
So I'm like, every day I wake up and my practice is to, how do I expand understanding for myself? Because I have to experiment myself first, right? I'm wrong all the time, but I have to expand that for myself. And when I expand that for myself, it bleeds into how I deal with society. So, right? And for me, the one thing about getting older is you have a track record where you can be a lot weirder. And people be like, okay, she's doing her, like, come on. They're not afraid, you know? People are very afraid when you're different. I always knew that, right? I've been different everywhere. I was like the only Vietnamese kid in Wausau, Wisconsin, right? I was, you know, like, I went to Vietnam and I was like the only fat kid, you know? So like, I've always been the only thing, and I excel at being the only thing, because by excelling by being the only thing is you have to learn to be so comfortable
and confident and believe.
It comes later.
How does it come later?
You just get beat up enough and you're like,
I'm asking for a friend.
I think the confidence comes from you being beaten up every day and you're like, oh,
you fuck it.
You are either going to assimilate, or you're born with such a little hot belly that you're like, you know, I've assimilated before. It's a tool. Assimilation is a tool.
I never got thrashed around as much as the last year. Because the bigger you get, the more exposed you are and people are like hearing your ideas and shit, you're going to get thrashed around. Like they're going to, and that's hard.
It's external. It's hard, but it's external. But inside,
yeah,
it's such a cliche, but inside you find out who you are, because inside you, if you have existential crisis, you can't deal with the existential crisis with existential answers. You have to deal with existential crisis with very deep internal reflection, right? So when you get that opportunity to have internal reflection,
take it.
You become who you are. Yeah, take it. Or you can, you know, choose what the world sees as an easy way. It's not easy. You know, like, do what your parents say. It's not easy.
Or do what other people in my world say every time I release something that is...
For them, it's not easy for people like me. Because for me, like, when I am under pressure of others, it feels unliberated.
Unliberated.
It's numb, you know? Mm-hmm. Like, if I have to...
It's uncomfortable.
Pressure of other... And not I, you know, it's like, oh, you know, I'm looking for Matt, you know, for like Matt, and you know, how do I get Matt? You know, how do I relieve from this?
Yeah.
And I think that's really important for certain people. Some people, they don't see it as, they don't get uncomfortable. But for me, I think I have in my blood that colonization or exploitation has lived so long in my blood that the minute I can feel it, I'm like, I'm being pressured. I can, and I don't like it. And I see it in my parents every day. My dad, if you hit his ego, he will quit a job. You know, like back when he was young. Yeah. And maturity, you realize, oh, that uncomfortableness is temporary. And for me, that uncomfortableness is temporary, right? It's like, oh, it's because I have to realign something. Sometimes it's as easy as, oh, you know what? That person's not for me. Sometimes you're like, oh, that job's not for me. That's it. You know, just a realignment. And now you don't have that strength of realignment because you have no proof that it's going to work out. Whereas for me, I have proof that you can quit a job. I have so much proof that you can quit a job. I have proof that you can walk away with something that doesn't feel right.
You can walk away from a Michelin restaurant.
Yeah. A whole group of us got, you know what? A whole group of us lost our livelihood. And all the, you know, all the educational and all the things that we had got restarted. I mean, like, what's worse than that? You know, and I try to take the hardest road. But the hardest road what people think is the hardest road is easy for me. Because then I'm like, oh, then I get to make the rules. Because I knew at a young age that I can construct those rules. Because anyone who criticizes those constructions, I can easily say, well, you don't know what the end looks like. Right? Whereas like if you're doing something, people know the end. They know what it looks like. Yeah. So they're going to start building it for you. I'm like, why do I want to let them in on that?
So how did you make that transition from food to the journey that you're on now?
I don't think for me, I guess it's not. I think there's an external looking transition. Mm-hmm. But for me, I'm so driven by my internal self that.
It was just always there.
It's the time, you know, like the medium wasn't working for me anymore. The medium wasn't working for me. You know, like food has always been, I love food and I love it as a medium. I love the techniques. I love the materials, the best materials in the world, the best anthropological studies, the best histories. It's wonderful. The one thing that doesn't align with me is me being chef. That's the thing that doesn't align with me. Because being chef means holding up a system that was needed during COVID because people were lost. My team was lost. They wanted a mom. They got a boss that is a chef. They got someone who, when you are in war, that's why most some Gen Zers feel about COVID. When you're in distress, you're going to run to the thing that's most comforting and binary. And so I played that role. I played the role of a chef, of a mom, of a leader, of someone who's like, can hold and, you know, very confidently hold away. And so I have that discipline. I can do it. But it's not my baseline, right? It's not my baseline. That chef, that kind of chef is not my baseline. That's operations. That's brigade. That's discipline. That's not my baseline. My baseline is no hierarchy. Everyone's equal. That's my baseline. So why would I upkeep something that if it was COVID again, I would probably do it again.
But did you know going into the restaurant before COVID that that's the system and the hierarchy and the patriarchy?
I went in to change it, right? If you look at my restaurants, all women, all non-hierarchy, like, you know, you don't need to. The only reason people call me chef, I said, the word chef to me is like the word ma, it's like man. Because you're in the middle of like everyone coming at you, only call chef when it's an emergency. When you're like, Matt, I need help. Matt, what's going on? Same thing, equivalent to me. When people say chef, it's the equivalent. My ears perk up. When in the, you know, if I'm walking around people, chef, something's wrong or people need my attention. That's the equivalent. That's always the way it is. But unfortunately, people wanted someone to fix their problems for them. And that's a different person, right? That's a mom plus. In a professional world, you kind of have to start drawing lines. Yeah. And, you know, there's different discipline, right? Because my discipline is so different than other people's way of disciplining. I'm talking about not discipline the study, you know, and the work, but discipline meaning the strict discipline, you know, like something you do every day. And, you know, and that kind of discipline, people want it. And that's why people want what's going on in government right now. People want that. They want to be told what to do. They want it to be told to predict the future. And they want all these things, this high expectation of what to do. And so for me, I'm like, I can do that. But it's a temporary thing. It's not a permanent thing. Being permanent in that for me makes you the colonel, makes you the chef. That's not me. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. But it's a great skill to have when one is at war.
Yeah.
And I am not, I would rather we not go to war. But if we went to war, I would probably put that hat on and be that leader again.
Yeah.
Because I've been there. I know how it feels to put all your heads together.
Do you miss it?
No. It's a tool.
No.
I don't like that. That thing's yucky. That kind of power is yucky. For me, I'm like a monk, you know? I'd rather be like, you know, a monk. Like that to me is like, you do you, I will help you. That's my baseline. But I'm a very good leader when you put me in that situation. Yeah. But I don't like it.
Yeah, I hear you.
Because it makes me not the human mm-hmm. I want to be.
Mm-hmm.
But it's my blood. I've, you know, it's the that thing had a lot of yay and violence to it.
Mm.
And I don't like it.
But you can do it, yeah.
But it's in me. But I have to face it. I have to face, you know, that violence, right?
This episode is brought to you by Redboat Fish Sauce. Some things will never be replicated by AI. The fragrance of fish sauce hitting a hot pan. The sound of your grandmother's voice telling a story only she knows. The feeling of a family recipe passed down through generations that are imperfect, alive, and completely real. Redboat Fish Sauce has been a proud sponsor of the Vietnamese podcast for years because, like us, they believe in authenticity you can taste. And together, we're bringing you the Viet Story Bank, a recording service built on that same belief. Your stories matter. Your family's memories, your lived experiences, your history. These deserve to be preserved exactly as they are. Untouched, unfiltered, they're human. So don't wait for the right moment. Learn more about the Viet Story Bank through the link in our show notes and pick up a bottle of fish sauce at H-Mart, 99 Ranch, or redboatfishsauce.com.
You know, when we, Ocean Vuong and I talked on our, he loves MMA, mixed martial artists. He loves the UFC, right? It's so surprising. But he can list all of the fighters, or the top fighters. He can list their styles. He can really get into the discussion of the art side of the violence. Mm. It's inside of us.
It is.
Yeah. It's inside of us.
It's not all of us. We're trying to eradicate it.
But it's in. It's epigenetically programmed in.
It's in us, right? Yeah. It's like, for me, like, I know, you know, like, if you touch anything that I love, you will know. But I will hopefully have done the meditation so I can be compassionate with you.
Yeah.
And for me, it's really important to always study that compassion. Like, you know, because like as a young kid, you know, in America, there's a lot of ethics studies. And, you know, it's like gun violence is one that we always talk about as a kid, right? Like, well, I don't believe in, you know, I don't believe in owning a gun. 90% of the country disagrees with me. 60% of the country disagrees with me, right? And they said, what if your mom got shot? And I'm like, humans get killed.
But what if my mom didn't get shot because there's no guns?
Right? That's right. So we go back and forth, yeah. Right? And then, but will I, am I human and will I get upset? Absolutely. But I've processed a long time how I can make peace with that. So if I can process that, I can process other little things.
Yeah.
If someone makes me upset, I'm like, oh, for me, I take it upon myself because I'm like a little monk, right? Where I'm like, oh, why am I uncomfortable with this person's violence? It's they're it's unjust, and I'm work. But for me to blame, to make them be more just is not going to work. I have to do the work, and then they have to come to their justice in their own way, right?
Before we move on to gun or gang, I want to ask you about this idea of craftsmanship versus vision within the creative arts, right? So what I've kind of noticed throughout the years is when I look at artists, chefs, filmmakers, directors, actors, there's two components that have, but I'm just breaking it down very binary.
I love this though. This is like, this is my jam.
Yeah. I'm breaking it down very, very binary. It's a binary conversation between craftsmanship and actual vision or expression.
That's the discussion that's going on in contemporary art. It's a constant conversation
right.
in contemporary art, right? And it's a constant conversation that I play with, for me, in more academically, in the performance art. Performance art versus performing arts, right?
Mm.
Performing arts is you are very good at this craft. You can deliver other people's work. And performance art, which is more intervention using, you know, different ways, different means, right? And then I start most places as a person intervening and person very conceptual. That's my work. I'm much stronger as a conceptual artist, but my working with my hands over and over again.
You're getting better.
Saves my ass, my ADHD ass. So I have to take that into account, right? I'm very, it's really funny. So we can touch upon this. So the last 3 years, I started a body of work called MOT. So I conflated MOT, which, you know, I always say,
Cray.
MOT Lotlanti, it's cool. MOT Highland, MOT is cool, it's too much cool, mm-hmm. right? And then MOT is a whole feng shui way of being, right? You do things in the garden.
It flows,
right? But it's also the expectation that our culture has of women. Like, MOT, you know? Don't disrupt the system and be good on the eyes. What does be good on the eyes means? Like, you know, like, don't be a weirdo. So it's very important. So you go from mat to mat. So it, both of those things interplay with that. But it's an intervention, right? So that's like clearly in the conceptual realm, right? Music in the Western conceptual world. I think conceptual art, the way the world is understanding it now, I live in the Western world. So it's a very Western concept, right? And then performing arts. So that's performance art. It's like these intervention and these ways of conceptual, of stopping the way we think, thinking differently. And then there's performing arts. Performing arts is you keep doing it. You perform it until you perfect it, right? So that for me is a really good example. And then when you merge the two, then that's where I am, right? Because I feel like the repetition and the learning of the craft comes when you iterate. Right. And I feel like for me, cooking is a great example. Painting, it's like whatever it is, you're really, for me, materials, I don't care about. I had to explain this to someone. Like, I don't really care about objects that much, but I really care about materials and technique in my art. Right.
And when you say objects, it's like you don't paint giraffes, you don't paint basketballs, you don't paint a car.
Well, that's representation. Are you saying,
what do you mean by objects?
Whatever is in my hands, I study the technique. And I study the materials and I have a vision for what it's supposed to be. The minute it becomes a thing, this thing that I pass on to people, it's out of my hands. Then they can objectify it and turn it into an object the way they want. Like, this is not an object. What is this object? Some people could say, oh, it's a scarf with words on it. That was not my intention.
What is your intention?
My intention is, and the type of paint I use, the type of technique I've learned, the dyeing of this, the story of this indigo dye and how it smells, right? The fabric and the weaving of this, right? That's important. But the concept of me carrying this on my back is it's conceptual.
Yeah. Tell me about it. Tell me about it, you carrying this on your back.
So for me, mat is, there's a triptych of it, right? It's like, so... I'm still having trouble explaining it. It's easier when I'm looking at it, but it's started off at its core level. The first iteration was called Mom's Garden. Like a garden is mat, right? But my garden is forgotten mat, right? So I conflated the idea of it, right? Because for me, like when I got my second Michelin, number one, you know, like my parents are like, oh, you know, like when I win something, my parents are like, so they're not really proud of it, but either that or they defuse it. They're like, oh, but not, you know, like they're like, you're so crazy. Like, you know, like whatever, like, you know, like, you know, like I don't, like people are really excited about these things. Not my parents. They're just not. It's not what their value is, or at least they don't show it to me, right? They're just like you crazy kid, like.
But you know they're like showing you off to their friends and they are. I'm just all Vietnamese parents.
I don't think they do. I think when they talk about me, because I think people are like my mom be like, you know, like that's her dismissiveness, right? You know.
But it's layered though.
Come to my mom, be like, you know, in my home, you know, my name is Thee, right? It's like Thee, right? So they're like, you know, my dad's like. chị bạn cứ đọc cái này của tiêu. And my dad's like, chứ đâu có biết trên kệ nó, you know, like nó làm gì kệ nó, you know, like, so that's his dismissal, right? And then my mom would be like, trời ơi, thì con mát mát của bác mà, con cháu biết gì. So it's like,
but that's the northern way of elevating our kids without elevating our kids. It's this whole idea of like do without doing and leave nothing undone. It's like this Zen, but you know, koan, right?
Being an American kid, it's like nothing will make them that proud, right? So it's fine. But my dad, when I got my second Michelin, you know, it was a Christmas dinner, you know, my brother said, hey, man, you know, I can't believe you got another Michelin. Like, how do you do it? You know, like you're crazy, sis. You know, it's like, you know, I'm not, right? You know, that's my thing. And then because I shouldn't have gotten it because I didn't have a restaurant. Like both of my Michelins, I didn't have a restaurant. I totally punked the system, right? And I broke the system.
Both pop-ups?
Yeah, like they're both just art installations, right? Whatever you want to call it. I didn't have a restaurant, which is like, you know, Michelin, hopefully they don't take it back, but it's okay, they can. But my dad said, you know, and then my dad got really upset. My brother said it, and my dad got really upset. My dad's like, I don't know why you have to do any of this stuff. He goes, you know, if they can give it to you, they can take it away. And he was really upset. So it made me really upset. I'm like, Dad, why did you say that? What do you mean they're going to take it away? And he's like, he goes, and he said, you know, he just said, if you know anything about Michelin, well, actually, I'm cutting to the chase, but you know, he's just like, he was very disapproving. And then I fought him. I thought it was hot patriarchy. I go, James got it. You know, my brother, then you'd be supporting him. Mm-hmm. And he goes, come go fight you, buddy. And then I said, it's because I'm a girl and you don't want me to take up space. And he goes, you take up a lot of space, you know? And he's like, you always like, you know, who'd like go get found, you know, like you always take up all the space, you know, and he's like, don't do that. Right. And so I'm like, oh, so patriarchal. We fought. And then we didn't speak for a few months. And then, you know, I made peace with it. He made peace with it. He forgot about it. And then I worked on it. I'm like, why is he so upset about this Michelin, right? And I'm like, whatever. And I said, oh, he probably doesn't think I deserve it. And then I'm like, I don't think I deserve it because my mom's a better cook, you know? And I'm like, everything I know is from my mom's garden. Like, you know, so I did this project based on my mom's garden, based on what I thought was more deserving of Michelin than me. So I started, you know, I'm like, I want to... Because it's such a burden on me, I want to give away the garden. So I was on this trajectory to give away my Michelin by giving away my mom's garden. Like, so I'm like, I'm going to make mom's garden so awesome. Then everyone can share my mom's garden. And so I wanted to do this whole project. And then throughout this thing, then like, I'm like, oh, it's really about the Michelin, right? And then I'm like, oh, you know, and I'm like, I don't know what it is, but it's the Michelin thing's really messing me up. So I squatted and I'm like, I'm just going to feed people by squatting. So I did a whole performance of squatting, you know, no joke, right? And I'm like, you know, like, you know, I'm like, you know, this is going to be like the performance. I fed people no joke, right?
Well, you fed people who were squatting.
I was squatting and they're standing, you know?
Wait, so you were squatting.
Just my no joke every day, you know, like this, you know, like, you know, and I'm not good at it. Yeah. I'm a little chubby, you know, and I am not Vietnamese. So no joke was very hard for me. So, but I'm like, you know, I'm not. So I did all these things and the point is, like, throughout the whole course, like, so that's the first one. And then I was invited to, you know, to work with Food Forward. And then that space allowed me, that used to be Bomb Building Factory. So it kind of allowed me to start thinking about food and bombs. And then while I was doing that, I talked to my dad and I said, Dad, why are you so mad? He goes, if you know anything about Michelin, you maybe don't want to participate in that system. He goes, if you've ever smelt Gaosu, maybe you should reconsider.
Rubber.
Yeah. But yeah, if you've ever smelt rubber, you would know that what Michelin means to a lot of people.
And the understanding of the history of rubber in Vietnam, in Dong Nai, in Long Khan, all of these plantations, and it was borderline slavery what the French did to the people. What
line it was.
Straight up slavery.
It's the heart of colonization. It is the one of the very first major examples of why they took this plant from South America and brought it all the way to Vietnam for laboring, you know, so, and that's just so they can sell more. And then they started Michelin Guide so they can sell more tires, mm-hmm. So they can enslave more workers. And so once I started going down that road, I'm like, okay, this is really more of a research, you know, I'm like, okay, dad is right. You know, like, why do I need to participate in this? So the work, so the first round was military, colonization, food, mom's garden. I revisited industrial food, right? Like, and my parents ended up in Indiantown Gap in Pennsylvania. I revisited what food that they were given as refugees, right? And because I'm working with food forward, that gives you fresh fruits and vegetables versus my parents who probably got industrial cheese and Spam and Jell-O, all packaged foods, right? So it's almost undignified what they give you as a refugee or as someone who gets government food, right? So I kind of revisit food and how policies are made and how we, as American, as you know, how America still holds food as holds people prisoners because of food.
So that Food Forward was your first foray into performance after Michelin's?
No, you know what? I never even thought about it that way. I just did the work and I kept doing the work. I don't think it was performance. I just thought that I was just doing installations. I don't even think I changed the language. I was just doing it.
From food to?
Food still, right? But I think changing the context of it, right? And I was really lucky. I met a woman, a scholar named Elizabeth McQueen, who pointed my work out as art. And then we started going down that work. And I'm like, yes, actually, that's what I do. Mm-hmm. And I said, but how is this new? And she goes, the world doesn't see this the same way you do. I'm like, oh. And she's like, I really think you should start telling people that this is the way you see things. And I'm like, oh, I've always seen this. So we started tracking back the work I did, right? Like you saw Good Fire in one of the previous iterations. Yep. And she's the one and she's like, Good Fire is clearly a performance and clearly an art piece. Why do you not call it that? I'm like, well, because I did it in front of people every night, 40 people, you know, a night. So we did the math and I performed Good Fire 8,000 times plus.
I saw you do it at the Hammer too.
Right, the Hammer, right?
Hammer and here in your studio. We did it for one of our East Films projects.
So I have performed this thing over 8,000 times. Think of every night, you know, in front of, you know, 20 times a night, you know, 40 people. You know,
in the restaurant.
In the restaurant, right? In this thing that I built. And then I think I've always looked at, because of my film and my art background, I always thought of my work in that way.
It's all integrated.
So the language is not new to me. I'm like, this is the way I've always thought about it. She goes, I don't think people think about it this way. And I'm like, I think they do. So we started having this really great conversation. And she's like, do you think food is performance? And I'm like, actually, yes. I'm like,
100%.
Every night. You don't think those chefs are performing? I'm like, that's 100%. Not normal. Going out and telling people what they eat and giving them all this backstory. I'm like, that's not normal. Like, you know, I'm like.
It is a performance.
And I said, but it's not unusual. I said, coming from my family, my mom performs because you have to perform the role of how to be a mom. You think mom wants to cook that many people in Lam Met Ng Vietnam, Lam Dam Ba Vietnam? You go to the military, Lam Dan Ng Vietnam. That's performance. That's not, there's a construct. You are performing that. And I started developing language for it, right? Because I'm like, okay, if that's performance, then what's performance art? And I'm like, oh, performance art is like, for me, the first few times you do it conceptually and you're intervening something and you're like, oh, this is a, cause like for me, like the concept is so important, right? So it's performance art because performance art is the intervention. For me, it's the intervention of that art, right? Makes it performance art, makes you, you're performative. So like someone, the word performative and performance are very close. The first time you post Black Lives Matter and you really don't know what it means, that's performative. But you have a chance to make it a part of who you are. You practice it. Then you start believing it. The 100th time you post that, if you've researched it and done it right, it becomes who you are. It becomes a ritual.
Wow.
It becomes real. Food is like that. The first time I perform it, it's performance art. It's not Nghệ thuật. Right? In Vietnamese, like, we don't have that differentiation, right? It's like, in Vietnamese, I'm still asking my dad a lot. I'm like, what's the difference between performance art and performing arts? He's like, I don't know this thing. And I said, one is like, Nghệ thuật, right? Like, you know, like one is like the craft. Nghệ thuật is like more the craft of the town, right? But they don't have the word for conceptual. And then I said, what about me, dad? Like the crazy thing. He goes, that he's really famous. Thì con là người, you know, bịa chuyện nó mà nói. You know, he's like, you're just a crazy storyteller. And I'm like, no, dad, it's like more conceptual. You know, so I have these really great conversations with him. But I'm so lucky that I have a dad that will entertain me you know, entertain these conversations, right? But I feel like those language, I have to look at the current situation in Vietnam and see what their language is, right? Because I think for Vietnamese American, we tend to lean on the English and the Western words that we know. So conceptually, I do want to dig more into this in the Vietnamese word, right? But I, for me, my I'm so lucky that I get to be mơ chữ, right? Mm-hmm. Like my chữ don't have dấu because I'm like, however you understand it is your way. That's why I don't put dấu because I'm like, sao cũng được. Because that's where I grew up. Hiểu cái gì cũng hơi mờ mờ hết. And I love that place. And I love people to be in that place of hơi mờ mờ. You know, like mình không chắc chắn. That means mình có cơ hội để thay đổi. So when you're not sure, you have the opportunity for change. And I think that's a great place to be in, right? And so people always like, they're like, why aren't you like, don't you care? And I'm like, no, my caring is people have more ideas. That's more important than my own idea.
You're a true artist.
I don't know.
But we all are. Yeah. We all are. But it's to the degree of how much courage do you have to practice?
But I wake up every day like this, Kenny. I'm 50-something years old, and I've been this person every single day. I have convinced everyone in my life that this is the way I am is acceptable.
Okay, so now I think about this question all the time. We have to be participating in this reincarnation matrix. Because how are you allowed to be born and be that way? And then there's like other artists who don't have the courage to just be in practice. And there's like artists who are just like constantly grinding away at the, there's like levels to all of this, right?
But you know, I do believe in reincarnate, right? I do believe in, that's what, you know, cause you can't see, you don't know it. You don't have words for it, but you feel it. You know, cause like, and people in Vietnamese shamanistic ways, they know. Because, you know, when I was young, you know, my parent, I walked down the street, you know, I was like young. I came when I was two, you know, so, you know, like in my little village or whatever, people like, you know, like they'll just like, you know, they predict who you are at a young age. And it's either self-fulfilling prophecy or there's some truth to it. And I think it's in between, right? When I was really young, you know, really young, my time, you know, I'll walk around the street and people are like, oh, cái bia này người nào cũng sợ hết. Right? And then it gets repeated. True or not, it gets repeated. Because once your parents believe that, they let you run with it. Right? Because I had a sister who died at birth, stillbirth, right? 2 years older than me, stillbirth, right? So my parents were so devastated that they had this second child. They were so lucky. And then people kept on going how lucky they were. But they're like, but this child's going to be like insane.
Yeah.
You know, they're like, this child is insane and she's a person of her own. So they have to accept that fate, right? And so why do people say that, right? And then I said, Mom, why did they say that? My mom be like, I'm Catholic. I don't believe in this stuff, right? But then she'd be like, but you get die now. Like, you know?
The lobe.
The lobe. Nah. Like, yeah. you know, I used to have so much hair. You get that now, you know? And then you get die. Like, my hands are really big, right? You get soon, my soon thought, and bad soon thought. You know, like, so they have all these, all these, like, beliefs and superstition.
Yeah.
And I don't think it's wrong. I think it's as many thousands of years of oral belief in history, right? So, and I really trust that. I'm like, it's not wrong. It's not right. It's not correct for another community. Because the thing is, it takes a whole zeitgeist to believe that. And then you start, but then I'm like, if you can change that, then maybe you can reverse it. Maybe you can reverse it.
It's all constructs.
It's all construct. Mm. Maybe you can be like, oh, you know, because like for me, like, you know, like, you know, people, I'm lucky, right? Because I'm like, they name me Min, you know, like it's in the books, you know, like very strong, right? But my second part, my name's Huyen, dark and yin, right? Huyen is yin, right? But my first name's Min, like bright and strong and, you know, like
intellectual and brainy, light.
Light, right? And then my second part's Huyen, like the dark, the opposite, right? But the thing is, I always went by Min, right? And at home, I'm play, like meppy, like little. Right. So it's like I have all these things that I can construct and fall upon. And I'm very lucky that I have a very supportive parents who let me construct these things.
I want to ask about two final things, which is
so much. And we haven't even talked.
I know.
It's fine. Right.
I want to know Two things. First of all, we're going to talk about gan and what that means and what this installation is about. And then how do people get to experience it?
Good question. You know, gan, okay, so mat. So the second iteration was at Manetti Shrem Museum at UC Davis. So I got to spend residency with the same scholar, Elizabeth McQueen. I'm going to call her out. And I did it for the 50th anniversary of the remembrance of the fall of Saigon. Right. So for me, that part was leaning into, I developed three sculptures. They're over there. I'm looking at the sculptures, but three different sculptures and then a performance. And then that's when I started building the whole mom's garden. I ganged because it became a pressure. So I ganged my mom's full garden with the seeds, right? And I would put all my mom's seeds in here. And then when it was live, I had all like the Zhao Teng, you know, Rav Jitu Hala. Like all the different kinds of
herbs, all the herbs in her garden.
And I gave it all to Davis, you know, and I said, and my conceptual, I'm like, if we were to have war again, what would people keep? They keep two things. You know what they keep?
Seeds
and language. And then, so I have these proverbs everywhere. And so that's why the boat, right? I'm like, oh, so there's proverbs everywhere, but kumbazao, because I'm like, because the new generation and whoever reads it, number one, people, if it looks like this, people think it's just a packing list somewhere or cargo. They don't know what it means. So for me, it's something I protect. I'm like, it's good that people don't know. It's like something that I'm still discovering for myself. So that protection. And then the second thing is it's hung moju. And I think, like I said, moju is like a strength for me. Like not always being wrong or people thinking you're wrong is such a strength. Like it's such a huge strength for me. Cause you know, when I go to Vietnam, you know, people like, and I love that space because it makes them expand, you know, then I would be like, oh, you know, it gives me a chance to learn and it gives me a chance. And then they'll like give a chance, like when I'm so generous and their belief, and they'll be like, then I give a chance to give my story. And then that is how I love that interaction. I love.
How do we get to now thinking about fruit forward and thinking about gang and thinking about all the other stuff that you've been I'm like, wait, there's a lot going on.
So was at the High Desert Test Site.
Okay, so.
And then that was when, did I send you that photo of me in the desert?
Yeah.
It's like the third one, right? Where everything blew away. And it was so cathartic and it was so beautiful. Like, you know, so beautiful to gang all this pressure. And then the pressure of the Michelin, right? Like we have like the piece of artwork that has all the chains of the Michelin research, like held down the ball and chain. So lots of conceptual work. How do you see it? My work gets exhibited and then it gets pulled away and, you know, and I tell people, but I don't really do a great job at explaining or marketing this work.
Yeah, what about like social media? How do we find you?
I am off social media.
Oh, wait, so you're off, so your brand doesn't...
I'm on it, but I'm not really active. I just repost what other people post. Like for me, it's like my practice is there, you know, but I'm at the point where I think connecting with people is much slower, you know, because I don't have to brand it I don't have to sell it. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
People brand to sell to get more legibility. And for me, I'm like going for understanding, for reflection. So you don't need that, you know? It's like, this is more reflective and it's longer. So do I need to get back to that short form branding? In and out, you know? Because it's like, sometimes if I have other circumstances, I will use that as a tool. It's a tool. But my baseline is more about the work is the work, right? The work is this. The work is talking. The work is doing. The work is using my hands. The work is thinking through things. And then one day, maybe I'll write more about it when the time is right. Because like for me, like the one Vietnamese thing about me, Thai.
Timing.
Timing is everything, right? Time and space is everything, right? So for me, like, I really believe in
timing, divine timing. Yeah.
I'm very good at it. I'm very good at, you know, because for me, like, I've told you this before, me, I can't fight be more productive. It's not your time. So do something productive with your time. Go help people. Go discover new skills and then
grow and learn.
And then, you know, and then your time comes to connect with people. Because for me, Tali just means connect with people. Connection, right? The time will come for me to connect with people. Right now, I'd rather connect like this than to a bigger public. Like, what's the point of it? what's the point of connecting to a bigger public that aren't looking for that kind of change, that kind of deeper conversation? They will want it and then they'll find it, you know? So, and I'm okay with that. It's slower. It's much more gentle.
Min, thank you so much for today. I am inspired as I am, you know, constantly trying to evolve and become more, I want to experience more art in my life and the creative process. You know,
Can we talk about that a little?
Yeah.
I think like that's my one thing that is different than when we first met, is I have always been an artist, but now I'm really on this kick. When I was at Gray Mai's talk and we talked about it,
yeah.
I'm really on this kick that I think our community needs more art.
Oh my God, yes.
I think our community needs more
expansion
of art and yet, and a better word for conceptual art, because I think that the more expansion we do of understanding, the more it is better, right? And I think, you know, like I'm really excited about this interconnection. I was talking to Nam off camera, but this connection of like Vietnamese and Vietnamese Americans, like that's very exciting to me. But there's a lot of work and art, and the way of us talking is not always going to be effective. But us seeing,
experiencing something,
I think it's going to be really important, right?
You know, when people are on the High Line in New York, they're going to see this big Buddha statue.
Mm-hmm. Yes, Dunjie.
Juan Andrews, Dunjie. Yeah. And that is an experience, right? Yeah. And I'm so lit up by that thought that is a Vietnamese person. Has that Buddha statue and so visibly globally.
And there's a lot, I think that we will, you know.
We need more of that.
We need more. And I also think that we finally have more, we finally are out of that kind of scarcity. Like the scarcity we have, there's still a lot of scarcity in our community, and we have to be really thoughtful about that and always share and make sure that everyone's okay. I still think that's our responsibility. But I think for the most part, our generation, we're out of like immediate scarcity. So we got to unmak soi, you know? So we're not
struggling.
So we have time to think. And having time to think means time to express ourselves.
Yeah.
And time to leave something for others, for the next generation.
Yeah.
And for me, like, I think about leaving something for the next generation all the time. And, you know, I think about like what message. When I was doing the Manetti Shrem show, and I still think of this a lot, I think there's a lot of missing gaps in our history as a Vietnamese community. And I think about how I fill those gaps. And writing history is not my thing, but sharing art and sharing ways of connecting and talking about things that are uncomfortable, like violence, is really important. You know, that we all experience violence. It's like, you know, and how do we take away the blame and make things more just facts?
Yeah.
And just be like, this happened. These are things that happen. We're all responsible and none of us responsible. But what we are responsible is for a future. And for me, I think about my niece and nephew who have Vietnamese in their blood and what the future is for them. And it would make me very sad if they didn't have the spirit of being Vietnamese and the language that you and I have shared in the last hour, if they didn't have a comprehension of that. I think that's really important for me. You know, and I love Vietnamese proverbs, you know, and I want more relevant ones for them. You know, you and I've talked about the political, like I love Vietnamese language, but I also love my version of it, which is very, you know, like less binary.
Yeah. Min, thank you so much once again.
Give me anyone any good advice.
We're not here for advice. We're here for the stories. We're here to archive the mind of a creative, a wonderful creative.
I'm so, such an honor.
Thank you for listening to The Vietnamese with Kenneth Nguyen. Special thanks to Brittany Tran, to Jane Nguyen, Catherine Nguyen, Tina Pham, Sydney Jamie, and Crystal Trinh. Please find us on Instagram, Facebook, and TikTok at The Vietnamese Podcast.